Hello, I'm Trevor Down, back at Jazz FM this week for the first of a new series of our monthly roundtables. On the agenda, James Rea's on the Road to Heart. Three isn't the magic number for Bauer's big city stations, Radio 1 for the over 50s, and Slow Radio. Are they pulling a fast one? Plus lots of recommendations for your future listening pleasure. Let's meet our distinguished panel.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Caroline Raphael and I'm Director of Dora Productions and also newly appointed Vice Chair of the Radio Independence Group.
I'm Phil Maguire. I'm the Chief Executive of the Prison Radio Association.
I'm Simon Cross. I'm owner of Shooting Shark, an independent production company in charge of lots of music and sports programmes such as 606, Fight and Talk, and a forthcoming project called Blood on the Tracks. And I voted for Caroline to be on the rig board as well. So I think I've got a friend on the panel.
A very good choice. Well, welcome back, Simon and Phil, and welcome for the first time, Caroline. How long is it now since you left the BBC and became a gamekeeper instead of a poacher, or whichever way around it is?
Yeah, I've never been able to work out which way around it is or which way around people want it to be. It is 2 years and 5 months.
And how's it been? Are you finding there's a spring in your step, that you don't have to go to strategy groups anymore?
Well, I always rather enjoy strategy groups, actually.
No.
I know,
You're in the wrong place here.
It's been very invigorating, actually, because I've gone back to making programmes, which I have always enjoyed and hadn't done. I have to say, the last time I'd made a programme, we were still cutting tape.
And remind us what you were commissioning when you were at Radio 4.
Well, across the 20 years, I was actually in... working directly for the controller of Radio 4, I commission everything from drama, factual programmes, comedy, readings, arts programmes. I help start things like Thinking Aloud. I've actually commissioned most things apart from kind of hardcore late night documentaries.
When you were doing comedy, people used to say, and they still do say about Radio 4 comedy, well, it's not very funny. Did it ever make you laugh?
Yeah, some of it did. But you know what? I'm not going to tell you what doesn't make me laugh, though I will one day. I think a job as a commissioner is not always to commission programmes that you like, and therefore it was not my job to commission programmes that made me laugh. But I knew they would make somebody laugh, and I could approach them in an almost technical kind of, not exactly academic way, and go, no, this will make, there is an audience for that. And if everything sounded the same, it would be really atrocious. Some people probably thought it was. So it was a kind of mixture of things. And there are one or two really, really long running, absolutely kind of gold standard Radio 4 comedy programmes, shall be nameless, that still don't make me laugh.
I'm so glad, Simon.
I never have to listen to again.
You giggled.
It must be really difficult to suppress your instincts and not just commission for yourself. It must be really almost impossible. So if you've managed to do that at all, it's amazing.
Does Radio 4 comedy make you laugh?
I don't listen to enough of it.
Okay. Phil?
Yeah, it does. There's enough of it that doesn't.
An example of a funny thing on Radio 4.
Okay.
John Finnemore. Okay, I won.
That's exactly what I was going to say. So I wasn't going to say Cabin Pressure, but after he finished Cabin Pressure, he did a series of, are they duologues?
Yeah, it was called Double Acts. The idea initially was to see whether, to treat them as a series of pilots and see whether one of them would fly as the new Cabin Pressure. That was actually a lot of pressure to put on John. So Shonit, who's my rather brilliant successor, I think just agreed with the producer, they'd just do six two-handers, and then they've done another six of two-handers, and just let them be what they are.
Well, let's move on to Radio 3's announcement that it's going to take, and I quote, slow radio to the next level. Now, I'm quoting here from The Guardian. It says, the chanting of Benedictine monks and the soft trudges of a walker travelling 200 miles through a wintry German countryside will be among the highlights. That's the word, highlights of a season of slow radio on BBC Radio 3. Now, what do we've seen slow television, Simon. What do you make of this concept?
I think I like it. I think it's good to go away from the frenzy of life, and it's good that there's somewhere to do that. I think that Radio 3 is possibly the only place that could do that, and the BBC is definitely the only place that could do that. And I think that if podcasting has taught us anything, it is that it's crazy to be doing radio shows that are 25 minutes long or 54 minutes long. And it's crazy to sit there before Christmas cutting down your shows and losing 15 seconds because they won't get time to do the whole of the news bulletin. So in some ways, podcasting has taught us to be a bit more open-ended. And as long as you respect your listener and don't... Can I use the P word?
Absolutely.
As long as you don't take the piss,
yeah,
right?
We encourage
and
it,
just
yeah.
go on and on and on and lose respect for your... Therefore, losing respect for your listeners, I think it's kind of an interesting and good idea.
The constraint of the furniture of radio, the news, the weather, the travel, all that kind of stuff, that's something that the podcast world doesn't have to be bothered with. And
yeah.
I guess
and
this
isn't that
is
great?
A, well, it is great. And I guess this is touching into that zeitgeist.
Yeah, because Serial, some episodes were 22 minutes and some were 47 minutes. And it didn't matter. They treated the audience with respect and they gave them what they thought was right for that show. This is going a little bit further than that. So, yeah, I think it's... I'm really interested to find out what it's going to be like.
Phil?
Well, as Alan Davey says, this is an antidote to today's frenzied world. And I think Simon's right. I mean, if it's going to work anywhere, it's going to work on Radio 3. There'll be lots of people that are thinking, God, this is a waste of licence fee payers' money, surely. But I'd be quite interested in hearing it. I haven't seen Slow TV, but I read in an article about Slow TV, they did a two-hour bus ride through Swaleside, they did a narrowboat journey through the Kennet and Avon Canal, and that sounds brilliant to me. It sounds like wonderful television. So I'd like to hear the radio version.
The bus trip, and it was good. And interestingly, the thing that I didn't like about it was they kept cutting cameras. So what I wanted was the same shot, actually, for the entire 2 hours. But then when somebody got on or off the bus... They cut to another camera.
You wanted it slower.
I wanted
you're
it even slower.
You're the only person who was watching saying, oh, slow down a bit.
Well, you know, I mean, you've worked in the telly, and people who direct television get carried away, don't they, with, let's have another angle, let's have a shot of that person in the crowd, let's do that. And, you know, certainly with sport, I don't know, I find I'd really much rather they showed me the game than the other people watching it.
Yeah, so, for example, basketball would be a good sport for you because it's camera one from one end to the other. But you're right, if you're not doing basketball, there's a tendency, and I've been there, I've done it. We've been here for 20 seconds. Quickly, let's move. Get onto camera three. Get somewhere else.
Sky Sports Cricket. You know. There's a man wearing a funny hat.
In defence of that, though, I like seeing faces on TV, especially when the players are wearing helmets or face masks or something. I like to see faces. So yeah, there is a tendency to... I would never go as far as Wimbledon tennis, who, after every Andy Murray point, have to show lovely Kim in the players' box. That's crazy. That's crazy stuff. But I do like to see a lot of movement.
That's enough for TV. Back to slow radio.
I think one of the wonders, and I do think it's a wonder, which I have had the pleasure of sort of exploring more of Radio 3, because I don't have to listen to Radio 4 all the time anymore. And actually, I listen a lot to their speech programmes. And one of the joys of Radio 3, I did a drama for them, which went out earlier in the year. And actually... It wasn't really until the point of delivery that anybody asked me how long it was going to be. All I had to do was sort of hit a 5-minute junction, which was fantastic. So the thing could breathe and move. And I desperately tried not to make it longer than it should be and to have some understanding that somebody's got to listen to this. And I do think very quietly there's some rather extraordinary things going on Radio 3. And I do think Alan Davey, because he's come from the Arts Council, so he's got a music and theatre and literature background, is the man to finally do this. I listened to some of Horatio Clare's first walk, which was rather beautiful and extraordinary. I was surprised how many of the trees he could identify and the different butterflies and all that. And I did have this image that somebody had given him a whole load of guides to follow.
Did you listen on headphones, by the way?
Yes, I did. And I also listened at night.
You probably need to, don't you, for this
Yeah,
stuff.
I also listened at night because I don't sleep very well. And I kind of sort of potted in and out. And I would certainly listen to the German one. There was the most beautiful music and beautiful sound recording. And I think it's really exciting. But I do think this is the kind of... I can see why he's doing it as a kind of calling card and as a showcase and something to make a noise. But I would suggest people sort of just keep looking at the speech on Radio 3 as a programme maker and indeed as a listener. It's some of the most surprising, curious, interesting, just playing with the form that I've heard for
it's
a long time.
It's something that Alan Davey's very keen on, isn't it? That he says in his presentations, I don't want us to be seen as just the home of classical music. I want us to be, he wants to be BBC Arts,
yeah,
really.
And they don't have to worry about, you say, the tyranny of these junctions. As somebody who was part of the team that restructured Radio 4, 20 years ago? Yeah, we did stick a news junction on at every hour, which possibly wasn't sensible. But then if you ask anybody when the news was on Radio 4, nobody had a clue because it was completely random. But I think that it's not even bravery. It's just why not? Just kind of relax.
Phil, do we
let it carry on?
Edit too tightly? I mean, when I get back and edit this, I will take out all your ums and ers, because I just do. But do you think I should actually leave them all in?
Absolutely not, Trevor. I think far too much radio isn't as listenable as it could be because somebody hasn't taken the time to do exactly what you're going to do with this.
Exactly.
There's one. We'll take that out.
Also, because we can. I mean, I'm making programmes again for the first time in a long time, and Sadie had just come in when I finished producing last, so we're still doing everything on tape. And of course, now you can get that digital razor blade in so tight. But what I personally find is a lot of people then stop listening to the speech patterns and the rhythm of the way in which somebody talks, and they edit that out. And I can hear it. And sometimes.
I think it's really interesting.
Wasn't an edit, by the way. Sometimes.
Because I run out. I can't remember what the next word is.
For you, Trevor, that was.
But I think it's very interesting that we're talking about slow radio at about the same time that there's been lots of chatter online about listening to radio, or rather podcasts, speeded up. So on the podcast apps, you can listen at 1.25 times or 1.5 times. And I do that, and I admit I've judged lots of awards in the past, and occasionally when I've got hours and hours and hours of awards to listen to, I might listen at 1.5 just to get through it.
If
I'm listening to the craft of the audio and I want to hear how it was built and how beautiful it is, I won't do that. But if I need to get through it and hear the words and what's being said and the content, then I'll do it. And the other interesting thing about this slow radio stuff is that they're releasing a load of it as 15-minute podcasts. And that's the bit that I'll listen to, Trevor.
This is a good moment, then, as you've brought up the subject, to talk about awards. The ARIAs have closed, the APAs are now open. Are we suffering from awards fatigue, Simon?
As a judge.
Don't tell us which one.
Especially now, as Phil has just told me, I could have turned my 18 hours of listening this weekend into 9. I'm devastated. No, I can't tell you what category I'm judging or give you any clues, but I really want to say that young people are really good on the radio. I think young people are really good on the radio. That's all I want to say about the category that I'm judging.
Okay.
But yeah, I haven't got... ARIAs are fantastic. As somebody,
have you entered them?
Can I just talk about winning him, first of all?
Yeah, you definitely.
Because
you
as a current holder of the Sports Show of the Year at the ARIAs last year...
And
getting done on stage by Robbie Savage and Kelly Cates, who suddenly, as professional broadcasters, so to speak, lost the ability to speak and allowed the producer to talk. No one in that audience wanted to hear from the producer. But no, as a winner, thanks, Trevor. Thanks for bringing it up. They're really, really great. As a judge, I'm kind of enjoying the process. It's taking quite a long time because it's quite cheap to enter the ARIAs now. And I think that people might have entered a few more entries than they might have done had it been a little bit more expensive. But yeah, I love the ARIAs. Really love them.
The APAs...
Thank God they're back.
The APAs have got a new idea this year, which is blind judging. The idea being that you won't necessarily know where this piece of audio has come from. Is that something you'd welcome?
Yeah, I think it's a very good idea, because you don't bring any baggage with you and you don't bring any expectations. You just listen to it. Actually, listen to it as a listener who probably never gets as far as the credits and just hears it. So I think quite a good idea.
I was thinking you might be in favour of that, because I'm sure when I've judged things before that have come from prison radio, you first start with the filter of, oh, it's prison radio. And your programmes are not necessarily even aimed at the prison population, are they?
No, they are. All the programmes that we make for National Prison Radio are all aimed at the prison population.
But as an independent producer, you make programmes for the BBC and others.
We make programmes for the BBC about criminal justice and a whole raft of other non-prison-related issues. So, yeah, PRA Productions, our production company, absolutely. But I think it's an interesting idea, and I would welcome it. But I think within 2 minutes of listening to our entries, you're going to know it's prison radio. You're going to know whether we've written...
Just by the editing.
There's no sports category in the production awards, so I have no interest in it, and I think it's a waste of everyone's time. The ARIAs, however...
Now, I did ask you to think about a couple of commercial radio subjects, and when we were outside, you all said you hadn't got much to say, but I'm going to plough on. I think it's interesting that James Rea, having done really well building up LBC into a national brand, has now got the job of running Heart. I wondered if you had any views on this?
As long as he doesn't put Katie Hopkins and Nigel Farage on breakfast, I'm not bothered.
Do you think it's a bad idea to have Katie Hopkins and Nigel Farage on the radio station, if you also have James O'Brien and some lefty people to have a balance across the week?
Yeah, I think people could argue that it's all right to have Farage on there because he's become quite mainstream, but that's partly because of the coverage, the unnecessary coverage he's been given by the press, I feel. But I don't think there's any excuse for giving Katie Hopkins a platform. She's proved that. She's been taken off air because of airing her odious views.
Yep, ditto. There's no excuse for Katie Hopkins anywhere.
Yeah, she's overstepped the mark. She knew where the mark was and deliberately chose to, and that's...
You like speech radio.
I do like speech radio.
Do you listen to LBC?
No, I don't. I mean, the only thing that occurred to me about this, knowing nothing about either job, is this kind of, and you see it happening in the BBC as well, is giving people enormous workloads. I mean, that, I'm slightly surprised. If I was a member of staff of either of the networks at LBC or Heart, I might wonder whether I was going to get their full attention. You know, it may be that he did really well on LBC because he was given the time and space to get on with it. And because you're doing really well, you're given even more. And I'm just slightly sceptical about
that. It's a very interesting point because it is the thing of the moment, isn't it? That if you're somebody like Bob Shannon, you have to be director of BBC Music and whatever he is, director of BBC Radio, and still effectively controller of Radio 2 and Asian Network and so on. And you just wonder how many jobs you can take on at that level.
Well, you could take them on. You can be at the title. Let's be honest. I doubt you're doing them as well as you probably could. I mean, you just feasibly can't. At the same time as an organisation's talking about flexible working and work-home balance and all the rest of it, this kind of, you know, oh, I'm going to say the word macho, but do you know what I mean? And I'll reply that to women who take on all these jobs as well. It sort of seems wrong, and I don't know whether it's cost saving or not. I don't know enough about it, but it just seems not a great message that somehow, in order to rise up the ranks, you have to be prepared to take on these ridiculous workloads.
I agree, but I do think it depends how much of his ability to do the job is about the fact that he's an inspirational leader. And I don't know the man, so I don't know if he is an inspirational leader. But if he is, giving him more responsibility and ensuring that he's got fantastic deputies underneath him actually doing the jobs that he ostensibly is doing, I could see it working.
And LBC has been in great form for a number of years. But I say that as somebody who lives in London. I'm interested to know how it does outside of the M25 because it's at its best when it's a local radio station and Blackwall Tunnel and Tower Bridge are both closed and Nick Ferrari is on to the people in charge. And that's, you feel that's for you.
I listened to it the day of the Westminster Bridge incident. Mm-hmm. And I was in Cambridgeshire at the time, and Five Live, I thought, was struggling. And I went over to LBC, and Sheila Fogarty was running the show, and they had reporters down there. And I thought, actually, on the day, I thought they won that, because they were more responsive, probably because they were in London. But I think LBC and Five Live are a really good comparison when you're not living in London. And I find myself reaching for, I've said this on the podcast before, but I reach for James O'Brien and I reach for Sheila when, you know, Radio 5 have got some of their dullards on. You're looking at me, Simon, as though you don't know which shows I'm talking about.
You could be talking about. We move on.
OK, anybody want to talk about Bauer, Phil?
I'm sure there are some people that are interested in this story, Trevor. I am afraid I'm not one of them.
Right, so
they're canning loads of radio stations.
They're changing some names and rebranding.
Changing some names. And the thing is, if you live in Sheffield...
Will I be able to listen to rock when I'm in...
Rock?
Yeah.
What, rock FM or...?
Yeah, rock FM.
Well, of course, it depends, because what you mean by rock FM. Do you mean rock FM, the station in Preston, or do you mean music that plays,
no, I mean
that is
station
rock?
In Preston.
Right, I don't know. I think rock...
You won't be able to, if Rock 3 existed, you won't be able to listen to that anymore.
Exactly. Isn't rock FM the one that's on AM?
Ah, right.
Counterintuitively.
Interesting.
They're all changing the name to the hits. Is that right, Trevor?
It is right. And well, obviously, we have nothing to say about this story, so I'm going to move on. I'm going to play an advertisement and then ask you to consider Radio 1 at 50.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
We've got Simon Cross here and Phil Maguire and Caroline Raphael, and we're going to talk about Radio 1 celebrating its 50th anniversary. Now, I thought that they wouldn't do much. I can remember very well the problems that occurred when they did their 25th anniversary. And by celebrating their heritage, they made themselves even more old-fashioned than they were perceived to be. Here they're launching a whole new pop-up DAB service called Radio 1 Vintage. What do we make of this?
The schedule, which Phil's handily brought in and I'm having a look at now, looks really good, really exciting. But just everyone should know, though, this is before Matthew Bannister and Trevor Dan get in. and there'll be some changes. There'll be some changes to this.
Where is the Bruno show? Is it on here?
Saturday the 30th of September it starts. I don't see Adrian just...
Yes, there is Bruno and Liz at Bruno 9 o'clock on Sunday the 1st of October.
Oh, really? Right, we'll get that out.
BLT on there, maybe. Would there be any on-air resignations during the weekend? That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, or tears. I'm not clear whether this is, looking at this piece of paper, which I brought with me, is whether these are archive shows or whether these are going to be newly hosted shows with archives.
Well, I got really excited about this. I thought this is fantastic. They're doing the right thing, putting it on DAB, because nobody at Radio 1's going to be interested in this. Radio 2 might be a bit interested. And there is a programme, or I think two programmes, that's going to go out on to launch this on Radio 2. But I got very excited. I thought, fantastic, I'm going to get to hear Mark and Lard doing a, inverted commas, Radio 1 show again. I'm going to be able to hear Bobby Friction and Nihal reunited in a studio doing a Radio 1 show again. It's all archive. Apart from the first couple of programmes, it's all archive.
I think that Colin and Edith is not archive. Well, certainly they've... I don't think I'm betraying any trust here. I think they've recorded their show. I think that's going to be fresh.
Right.
So maybe...
Well, Classic Albums with Roger Scott isn't new.
No, not obviously...
Kenny Everett.
No, there is an Adrian Just show on here, you know.
Is there?
Yeah. There is. 1 o'clock on Saturday the 30th.
If this is the sum total of their PR, which I'm sure it's not. It's not actually clear, as we've just discovered, what it is we're going to be listening to. And then I was just wondered whether they were going to do anything on Radio 1 itself or whether they were worried about their current listeners.
Yeah.
Because, on the whole, my experience of young people is that they do have an interest in things which are not just happening in front of their nose at that moment. And a small, cleverly done look back might be quite interesting, quite surprising.
Trevor, I know that you're the host of this podcast, so you normally ask the questions, but of the four people sitting in the studio, I think your opinion is probably the most valuable and the most interesting when it comes to this because of your experience with the station. What do you think of this?
Well, I don't think they should do it. I think it just sends out all the wrong messages about Radio 1. If I was still running Radio 1, I'd say, let's please not do this. Here's a little story. You'll remember the old status quo issue from the 90s. And how they sued the BBC because we wouldn't play their records and we didn't put them on the playlist and all the rest of it. It turned out that the reason they thought that they had a cast iron guarantee that their records would be played on the Radio 1 playlist was that in order to book them for the 25th anniversary live show, the then controller of Radio 1 had said, look, we've got to have you because we need a band that we were playing 25 years ago that are still extant. We've got to have you topping the bill. And they didn't want to do it. And he said, look, if you do it, I'll guarantee you that your records will always be played on the Radio 1 playlist. And that's where that problem started. Did you know that, Caroline?
No, I didn't know that. But I'm also, just picking up what you said, is that the person who's running Radio 1 would have probably said, please don't do this. If I'm absolutely honest, that's what this smacks of. Yeah. Actually, no, we don't really want to do it, but we have to do it. And so we'll do it like this. We will just shunt it.
I think I'm in favour, though, side. Trevor. I think I would... I think this is...
You will listen to this?
I think I might dip in, mm-hmm. having got this schedule. They need to get this out there, right? Because I want to listen to John Peel and Tommy Vance. I want to hear Tommy Vance.
5 o'clock on Sunday. Will you go to Sky Sports or to the ranking Miss P?
I'll be producing 606.
Okay. I think that's Radio 1 Vintage.
Sorry, just to interrupt, is that I think it's really interesting. They're doing their comedy shows. Radio 1 launched a lot of really, really interesting comedy, and it's always been a sadness that, for probably very good reasons, they just stopped doing comedy.
Is there a Chris Morris show on here?
Well, the Radio 1 comedy shows, I'm really hoping it's going to be Chris Morris.
They should have put out a whole hour of Chris Morris.
They certainly should.
I think this could be a hit, though. I think we're underestimating this a bit. I think, should we meet again, we four? We'll look back on this and say, okay. I think we didn't give that enough attention.
Am I being
at the time.
Cynical?
Let's jump on that bandwagon. I think it could be a hit. Okay. I think they might do this again.
I agree. I think it could actually be. And they'll be rather shocked and probably disappointed that it might prove to be incredibly successful.
The editor of Radio Today, Roy Martin, wrote to me, yesterday, saying, what are we doing for the 30th of September week, you know, the 50th anniversary of Radio 1? Because it's the biggest story of the year. Is it?
Well, in our business, it's a big story.
Is it?
Yeah, because there's so much has happened, right? And so much, all of us have got something to do with Radio 1, whether it's as a listener or as an executive like yourself. I think the country has flirted with Radio 1 at some point in their life to an enormous amount of people. I think, and we might do a fight and talk about Radio 1. We might do it. It's still in discussion. I know it's quite kind of late in the day, but that's the way we roll, Trevor.
What, to do it for Radio 1?
Well, we were thinking of some theme shows about a year ago, and we thought it'd be really fun to get some Radio 1 people together and do a Radio 1 fighting talk. And then we realised the 50th anniversary was about a year away, so we sort of sat on it a little bit too long. So now we've sort of suddenly revived the idea, and as long as Greg James can do it. Now, we think we might do it as an extra show.
Right.
And Radio 1 could play some clips, maybe, or 5 Live could do some clips, because in case people don't know, Fighting Talk's a 5 Live show. And we're not sure if it replaces just the Saturday morning 11 o'clock sports show, which might not go down well with the sports
fans. And would
fans.
Cynical Old Bastards be invited on it?
Yeah, I think we'd definitely have a Cynical Old Bastard. But, yeah, that's definitely something we're talking about right now, this week. The next couple of days, we'll decide whether we're going to go ahead with the Fight and Talk Radio 1.
You heard it here first. Is it time to talk about our recommendations?
I think
it probably is. Let's play a sweeper.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
OK, this is my favourite bit of the podcast when we do a roundtable. What have we been listening to, Caroline?
So I've been listening to a lot of Radio 4. That's what happens when you get to my age and you can't sleep at night. But on a serious note, the two shows I wanted to mention are Saturday Review and Homefront. Saturday Review, because
which was
very
going to come
curiously,
off,
exactly.
And it's not now.
It's not. The controller, I'd give her dues, decided not to take it off. I suspect it was money that was the original reason, although it's four people sitting around a table talking. If you probably start adding up, sending them around the country, their time and all the rest of it, I can imagine that it would have saved a small amount of money.
Can but I just interrupt you? I'm sorry to do this to you. What would somebody on a panel like that be paid by Radio 4?
I haven't got a clue.
I bet you have got a clue.
No, seriously, I don't have a clue.
150 quid? 250
possibly,
quid.
And then all their expenses to get to the Art Gallery in Manchester or the show at Chichester or whatever. In that sense, it's a lovely gig. Wouldn't mind doing it myself. But
so there is an expense in there.
Oh,
that
yes.
Perhaps if you were local radio, you wouldn't be spending and you'd get everybody.
No,
to do
you
it
could
for
do
nothing.
It in local radio, but probably you would stick very much to your parish, as it were, and
okay.
You know, whatever you can see from the top of the church tower kind of way of defining your space. But I was really disappointed when I heard that it was coming off. One, because I've always loved it. And secondly, because it's the only place for going back actually to slow radio where there is engaged, intelligent conversation where nobody's trying to sell anything, discussing lots of different views, talking about a particular thing, which very often will open up into something more general about film or the state of the novel, things which mean a lot to me, and I enjoy listening to clever people being engaged with. Incredibly clever, diverse from class and ethnicity and gender panel every week. It changes. And I was just delighted when it was back on.
Here's a clip.
And the thing that was so unconvincing, they don't go on endlessly about these existential questions. What they do go on about endlessly is the quality of their materials. They're always talking about paper and ink, and the idea that Giacometti could casually...
But he does at one point. He destroys some etchings because they're on the wrong kind of paper.
But he gets it wrong. He gets it wrong. And the idea that Giacometti could have done that, it seems to me absolutely incredible. Maybe it's correct. I don't know.
The only thing that I did feel sort of give it its due on was when he did say about Unfinished, why his portraits against the photography, that this was his backlash, that there was no point in finishing a portrait because photography does that for you. It was about the only moment. And the diving into the swimming pool.
OK, well, I don't think you're going to send people rushing to this, but Giacometti fans may like it. It's
always a much nicer listen, I think, than Front Row. Because Front Row is always advertising something, isn't it?
It's
always selling a new book, a new exhibition, a new this and the other. The other thing about Front Row is it's desperately respectful. yes. of everybody. No one ever says, I went to this exhibition, it was utter shite.
No, where they will do on Saturday Review. I don't think they'll use that word.
That's the show I want to listen to.
There is a tendency with certain presenters on Front Row, which I can now say, of ending everything with isn't it and don't you, and it's sort of, and then you end up with sort of all sort of mushing down to some kind of consensus, and there's hardly any time to do anything, whereas this is 45 minutes of kind of intense conversation.
What else did you bring?
I also brought Home Front. Now, I was very skeptical about Home Front. I'm a started off in radio drama. Home Front runs not quite all year, but in the 15 minutes that was the beginning of you and yours, as I tell, I'm struggling to remember the time. Oh, I know what time it was. It's 12 o'clock. And it runs for about 11 or 12 minutes before you go into you and yours. And it was one of the many, and some people will say too many, moments programmes to mark the anniversary of the First World War. And I was very sceptical about it at first. I thought there were other ways of doing it without spending what, after all, is extra money. At a time when we were busy cutting programmes. When it started, I was still employed by Radio 4. But I found myself getting drawn more and more into the story of these people. Sadly, it has breaks, which really frustrate me. But it's incredibly clever in that it takes what happened that day and feeds that into the story. But the story is quite curious. There's something slightly uneasy about it and slightly unreal about it. And it's just entering the phase, because obviously it's now 1917, when men are coming back from the war, the full horror of the war, the mental health problems and how they were being treated. Folkestone and Dover and Chatham and all those sort of Cinque-Port area are being bombed. So the war is starting to be very, very much at home. But there is a kind of, it's not purely naturalistic, which I find really interesting. And it's got wonderful writers and directors and actors in it. And
talking of the writing, though, don't you think sometimes it's a little bit modern? I mean, I'm over-egging this when I say this, but people in 1917 don't say, wow, man, that's cool. Now, they probably don't in Homefront,
no,
but there are
there
is language in there that I feel doesn't belong.
You might be right. I'm not going to say whether you're right or wrong. I don't think anybody said, well, that's cool. But I think that, for me, it's the small things, like just assuming that your daughter will go and fetch your raincoat for you, or your daughter will bring you breakfast, or the women will do this. Not done in any kind of political ways, just settled into a real sense of what life was like that when the bombs were beginning to drop. And we always think of, you know, the Blitz as well as the Second World War thing, when it's really First World War. And I've just become totally enthralled by the characters, and I'm now getting anxious about what happens when we reach the Armistice Day, because actually it's a particular kind of passion for me in terms of what happens historically, is that actually how people dealt with their lives after the war is a whole nother story. Things did not go back to normal. They never were going to back to normal. People now have to live with whatever happened to them and their family during the war. So I'm hoping that from time to time, Radio 4 will go back to those characters and their lives. It's incredibly engaging.
What's got into you?
Johnny's back.
He's alive?
Alec, I am sorry.
Are you?
I really am. I'm so very fond of you.
I had hoped, dared to hope, that as time went on I might have eclipsed him in your affections. I so wanted to believe. It's not even about believing it. I know it. Deep down, I know.
Know what?
That you and I are more suited. We are.
No, Alec, we're not.
How can you say that?
You're too good for me.
I'm not. I'm as flawed as the next person.
You aren't.
Isabel, we're all flawed. It doesn't make us bad people.
3 years ago, yesterday, my brother Freddie died. And after I'd read the telegram, I went to the pier, where I let a soldier, a man I'd never met before, kiss me.
Oh, I see.
That's Homefront on Radio 4. I think the best thing about it is that it means we have 50 minutes less of you and yours. But perhaps I'm being cynical again. Phil Maguire.
You won't be surprised to learn, Trevor, that I have brought with me two American narrative storytelling podcasts. One of them is my favourite, and the other one is my new favourite, if that makes sense. So I'll start with my new favourite. Radiotopia is a podcasting collective that was set up by Roman Mars from 99% Invisible, brilliant podcast, and PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. They fairly recently took on the amazing Julie Shapiro as their exec producer. And together they launched, about a year ago, an international podquest. They were looking globally for a new podcast. I put one together with some colleagues. We didn't win the podquest. The winner was something called Ear Hustle. Ear Hustle is recorded in the media lab at San Quentin State Prison. It's produced by a guy called Erlon Wood. He co-hosts and co-produces it alongside a woman called Nigel Poor, and a prisoner called Antoine Williams is the sound designer. Antoine's doing 15 years for armed robbery. Erlon's doing 31 years to life for attempted second-degree robbery. So these are guys that have been in the system for a long time and know it. It's a fairly simple format. They pick a theme each week and they tell a series of stories around that theme. And the two co-hosts, one female non-prisoner, one male prisoner, discuss the recording. So the first episode is called Cellies. It's about living in a small cell with a cellmate. There's an episode about being in gangs. There's an episode about prison pets. There's one about spending an inordinate amount of time in solitary confinement. And there's one called The Boom Boom Room, about finding a quiet place to have sex with your partner when she comes to visit. And it's great. It's simple, but it's powerful. And it really does tell nuanced stories about the lives of people in prison.
Hey, Greg, can you come here a second?
What's up, man?
Well, I'm just doing a check-in. How many days now to your family visit?
Oh, man, I got like 20 days.
And when was the last time you saw your wife?
Last time I saw her was yesterday.
So what did you guys talk about in terms of the family visit?
Actually, we talked about her bringing some soft, big, fluffy pillows to just, you know, lay my head on. So I'm looking forward to that.
Describe to me what you think it's going to be like putting your head on one of those pillows.
Oh, man, I could just imagine like a big old soft marshmallow. She can bring a comforter. She can bring some sheets, and some sheets with some color, because we have just regular white sheets. So I don't want to see white sheets. I want to see some sheets with some color. So I'm gonna make the bed. So I'm going to have like a mattress cover, and then I'm going to put the sheet on top of the mattress, and then the other sheet, and then I'm going to lay the comforter down. And so just being able to, you know, slide on those nice soft sheets, and, you know, to feel that comforter, and I could just imagine it's going to just be comfort after comfort. I'm going to go to sleep in comfort, and I'm going to wake up with comfort all around me.
Wait a minute. You talked about the sheets and you got something soft next to you?
Did you say that the female was called Nigel?
The woman's called Nigel.
Anything goes on a podcast. Another clip.
This is from another amazing podcasting team in the States, which is Gimlet Media, set up by Alex Bloomberg, formerly of This American Life and Planet Money. And it's probably the first one I go to as soon as it drops. It's called Reply All, and it's hosted by PJ Vogt and Alex Goldman. And it's a podcast about the internet. And I'm not particularly techie. I'm not particularly into the internet, but it's fantastic. It's really a podcast about modern life and how to survive it. And they tell fantastic. It's the best example of American narrative journalism storytelling. It's brilliant journalism. They're great stories, well told. And what really makes it is the chemistry between the two of them. The episodes that I'm going to recommend are episode 102 and 103, Long Distance and Long Distance 2, in which Alex gets phoned by a tech support telephone scammer from India, and he takes him on.
So we are successfully connected now, sir. Can you see my cursor moving on your screen?
Yes, I can.
So what did he do when he started to get in there?
Oh my God, it is the best. Okay. I could not believe how amazing it was.
What?
Okay.
So weird.
So what this guy did is he got on my computer. He opened up the terminal, which is just this little window that allows you to enter text commands into your computer.
I've been in there like twice. When you open terminal, it looks like you're hacking a mainframe in a bad movie.
Right. That's exactly what it looks like. And he ran a command called netstat. And what netstat does is throw up a bunch of information about your computer, like connections to the internet. It has the old school hacker look that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So then he suddenly makes the terminal window incredibly small.
Like he just made it like postage stamp sized.
Yes, so that he could still use it, but I couldn't see what he was doing. Why did it get so small?
Just give me one second, sir.
Trying to read it.
Even I don't know, sir. Just Give me 1 second, sir.
That is so, like, not slick.
And then he made it big again, and written in it was something like iCloud compromised, SSED hacked. And then it said, what it meant to say was Zeus Trojan detected. But uh-huh. what he had typed was Zeus Troan detected with no J. What's Zeus Troan?
Okay, the warning is Zeus Trojan, sir.
But it doesn't say Trojan.
See a Zeus Trojan is found in your device?
It says Troan. It doesn't say Trojan.
Thank you, Phil. Simon, you usually bring us something American.
And I would do that this time as well. But I found something very local, very niche, very much, I think, on your radar as well, Trevor. But first of all, to answer the question, what have I been listening to? Phil, I've been listening to ARIA entries in real time. So that's what I've been listening to a lot of. In between that, I've had a little bit of listening to, you know, I'm a Howard Stern obsessive, and I listen to him a lot still. He's still got it, but you sense the end is near. Howard Stern fans will know what I'm saying when he hasn't filled the arty seat. He's still got Robin, his newsreader, with him, and he's still got Gary, the producer, but his staff is getting smaller and smaller, and when people leave, they're not being replaced. So I'm still listening to a lot of Howard Stern. It's the NFL season about to kick off, so I'm listening to a lot of NFL podcasts, again, from America. Dave Damashek, who's a writer on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, but also an NFL expert, does a particularly good one. But Josh Widdicombe's Quickly Kevin is a celebration of 90s football, Trevor. Right up your alley, I would say.
You'd be right.
It's really good. It's had a first run of around 10 shows. Do you know why it's called Quick? I think the full title is Quickly Kevin, Will He Score?
Keegan?
No, think about David Batty
against missing the penalty?
Against Argentina, yeah. Because do you remember the commentator? Was it Brian Moore?
It would have been,
had
yeah.
Had Kevin Keegan with him, and he said, you know David Batty really well, Kevin. Will he score? And Kevin goes, yes. And then the next line of commentary is, of course, David Batty missing a vital penalty in England going out of the World Cup. It's called Quickly Kevin, clever title. Josh Widdicombe leads it. The Ian Dowie episode is very well recommended. And again, I know I'm going niche here. We're now ignoring everyone else in the room, Trevor, and indeed all the listeners. This is just between you and me, right? But there's the Ian Dowie interview. He reveals, bizarrely, that John Harkes, the former Derby and Sheffield Wednesday midfielder, was an especially good impressionist, whose repertoire was Al Pacino, Jim Carrey and Radicescu, the Romanian footballer. And they make the point that's not a great... You know, if you were on Britain's Got Talent, the first time you nail Pacino and you go back for the next round and you do a great Jim Carrey, but doing the Romanian footballer Radicescu is not going to get you through to play in front of the Royals. But Josh Widdicombe, Quickly Kevin, really good podcast.
Swap them away, and I'm playing up front with Danny. Who is
the Portuguese.
Portuguese Danny,
yes.
Who is...
Yeah. Very attractive young man.
So you're a very attractive young man. Harry finally gave up the ghost on him when he'd had a... I think maybe a cab driver told him that he'd had a party at his house and it didn't finish till 5 a.m. There was numerous girls and drink involved. So I think that Harry then pulled him and said, this is not going to quite work. But I thought he had great potential. I don't know what he went on to do. I think he's back in Portugal now, but he could have been a talent.
Yeah.
I think, wine, women and song.
Harry,
the rest is just wasted.
Harry Redknapp said, he's so good looking, I don't know whether to play him or fuck him.
That's fair. That's a fair comment.
He said that to me a few times, but not in that way.
I had a meeting last week with some people from Audio Boom, who host this podcast, and I was looking at my notes just before we started this, of that meeting, and I'd written down, the same word twice as my notes. I'd written niche. So 90s football's not so stupid.
As Phil was talking about Alex, who got scammed and then turned the tables, I realised I'd heard that story, and I'd heard it on, I think, You and Yours, against which I will not hear a word said. It's one of the few programmes on Radio 4 that is actually about
our show, You and Yours. Come along.
Somebody did a long time ago. But it's one of the few things on Radio 4 that actually bears relation to everybody, the small little things that worry and trouble us during everyday life. Anyway, but I heard it either on You and Yours or one of the news programmes, which says something quite interesting about where BBC staff are getting their stories from or what else they're listening to. Well, great story. So I shall go back and listen to the original podcast.
You've been listening to Caroline Raphael and Phil Maguire and Simon Cross. This has been the Radio Today Roundtable for September 2017. Do we have anything else to offer anyone? Their bolts are shot. Thank you very much for coming. Let's have the news now. Here's Stu Clarkson.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. And as you've been hearing on the panel discussion, the full schedule's been released for the digital pop-up station Radio 1 Vintage, which is on air from Saturday the 30th of September through to Monday the 2nd of October. It runs 6 a.m. till midnight each day. It kicks off with a 50-year countdown ahead of live shows featuring Tony Blackburn and Nick Grimshaw. There are going to be specials about the Roadshow, Newsbeat, the official chart, the Live Lounge, the Evening Session, Radio 1 Comedy and John Peel, as well as dozens of hour-long shows featuring archive clips of individual presenters or shows, and those that are still alive, we understand, will be sharing their memories of Radio 1 around the old clips. You can see the full schedule at radiotoday.co.uk. Elsewhere, 18 BBC local radio stations from Newcastle to Devon, Cumbria to Suffolk fell off the air last week following a BT fault in Oxford. It caused problems with Vylor, the centralised playout and technology system, and that meant many stations just couldn't do anything about it, with even backup studios not having access to audio clips or outside sources. Many of the stations relayed 5 Live while the problems were sorted out. LBC's James Rear, as you've been hearing, is adding the Heart managing editor's job to his current role. He takes over from Gary Steen, who's leaving Global in a few months to return to the Northwest. A new programmer for digital station Virgin Radio as well, former Galaxy and Bauer PD Mike Cass, has joined the station as content controller. And Bam Bam has left Sam FM in Southampton after 6 years on Breakfast on the Station. Damien and Jules are taking over the show instead. And that's it for this week. There's more online at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stuart. Good luck with the podcast for the next 2 weeks while I'm away. Here's David Lloyd now with a special look back at Classic FM's 25 years.
Radio Moments. Radio Moments.
This is an engineering test transmission in preparation for the new independent national radio service, Classic FM. Transmissions will be in stereo, and signal polarisation is mixed.
Well, polarisation may have been mixed, but in the long term, the response to Classic FM hasn't been. This week sees its Silver Jubilee.
Good morning and welcome to Britain's first national commercial radio station. This is Classic FM. I'm Nick Bailey, and this is George Frederick Handel.
I was sitting in our first ever studios, located in a converted gin factory in Camden Town in North London. Now, for months, our test transmissions had consisted of birdsong, which had been recorded in our chief engineer's garden. Quite a clever ploy, if you think about it, because there was no copyright. But it was such a peaceful sound and a great launch pad for what was to come.
Picked up the phone to Michael Bucht and I said, Michael, I've got a daft idea for test transmissions. I've got this tape of birdsong I made. Can I put that on? Without hesitation, he said, yes, that's the thing to put on. I said, yes, I'm glad you agree, because I think it'll create intrigue.
I was certainly conscious that this was history in the making.
I get the same buzz every day of the week that I got on the 7th of September 1992. That's imprinted on our memory because it was day one. And we were just so nervous, I cannot tell you. Because this was a huge venture with everybody out there, horse, foot and artillery, ready to go for us. And then one of the newspapers the next day said, the best thing that can be said about Classic FM is that very quickly we will come to believe, I'm summarising now, that it has been there forever. It's been there all the time. The corny phrase, which as you know, we say that to a certain extent we're a rock and roll station playing classical music, and we have opened the cupboard of elitism and given the music that was there over the centuries to people who thought they didn't like it and suddenly discovered they do. Few people actually hate us positively, you know. Lots of people say, well, it's not for me. But those who like the radio station love it and are very loyal.
They went out and did their research and I think played various bits of music to see what kind of reaction we got. And I think the final conclusion was that there were lots and lots of people who, like me at the time, who liked classical music but didn't know really much about it, were frightened off by Radio 3, were frightened really also to go to concerts, with the exception being, I suppose, the open-air concerts. And these were the people we wanted to tap into. Our programme controller, Michael Bucht, probably better known to people as Michael Barry, the crafty cook, very much an impetuous person, very much a man who makes the decision on the moment. And he shouted across the room to anybody who'd be listening, I think, but I think specifically to music department. And he said, and this was only with a few days to go, he said, I know what we're going to play for our first record. It's going to be Handel and it's going to be Zadok the Priest.
In 1975, I was asked by the AN-AN committee to write a report on the future of local and commercial radio, and I put at the top of the list an FM popular classical music station. 1975, I'm actually on record in a governmental department. So I've been chasing that for 22 years, and it was a wonderful opportunity to do it, but nobody believed at the time it was going to work.
Archive audio from Nick Bailey, former presenter Henry Kelly, chief engineer Quentin Howard, and launch programme controller Michael Bucht. Michael died 6 years ago. Running the licence application process for the new station had been Ralph Bernard.
The three applications that we knew of were obviously ourselves, Classic FM, and the company was, it was a GWR company, but the name was Classic FM. Radio Clyde put forward an application for a mixed-based old radio to easy-listening style radio station. And Chiltern Radio had formed a consortium for a company called Showtime. And the other two, to me, sounded pretty dire in terms of programming, but I'm sure they would have had certain success, perhaps, you know, in a market which would be more developed. But for the first national station, I think it needed to be something special and totally different to anything else that was around. And we waited 6 weeks, and then I got a call saying, very sorry, yours is not the highest bid. That was a crushing blow, because I was so convinced that this was going to be a success and was going to be a major point in British radio history, not just, you know, commercial radio history. You know, we'd be at the heart of it and we'd be right in the middle of something very important.
The national licences were awarded by the regulator to the highest bidder rather than the beauty parade system for local stations. The winner, however, Showtime Radio, didn't get its funding in place and the licence fell to Classic FM. But the route to on-air still wasn't smooth. Investment for Classic had to be found.
Right at the last minute, a bit like the application, I did a presentation through a contact of Henry Meekins to Peter Michael, Sir Peter Michael, who'd made a lot of money in his own business. And the great thing about that, I mean, I spent nearly 2 days convincing him that Classic FM was a good idea. But the great thing about that was that Pete, as he was known, effectively signed a cheque at the end of the day and said, OK, he didn't have to go to a board, he didn't have to go to anybody else, he made that decision.
Ralph Bernard, then her GWR, the station's now successfully run by Global. The venture was hugely helpful, too, to commercial radio generally in the 90s. That was a time when it was desperately trying to grow its profile amongst national advertisers. So, happy 25th anniversary to Classic FM. Its business plan projected it would reach 2.8 million listeners. It currently has well over 5 million. Happy birthday. Radio
Moments. Thank you, David Lloyd, Stu Clarkson, all the panellists on the roundtable. I'll be in the United States for the next couple of weeks. Stu Clarkson will be looking after you, and I'll see you very soon. Thanks for listening. This has been a TDC production for Radio Today.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.